At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive.
All right. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm here with Lindsay Dalton, one of our pharmacists that is also here in Ohio. And we are both Ohio Northern Fuller Bears. So shout out to all the Fuller Bears out there that are listening. And so today Lindsay, I don't know if you want to say anything. Why don't you say what your background is? And because I know you've been on the podcast before, but some people may be new listeners, what you love to help people with.
Yeah. So I focus on a lot of women's health and energy fatigue, and just helping women figure out why they're so tired, what their root causes are for fatigue, whether it be thyroid or cortisol, stress, and just help them through a lot of lifestyle modifications feel better, have more energy.
Awesome. So we are going to talk today about the immune system, because so many of those lifestyle things that Lindsay just mentioned are things that can help support your immune system as well. But there's so many different things, and we're recording this in the middle of our Ohio winter, but you may be listening to this at any other point in the year. But we really just want to dive into how the immune system actually works, and then also lifestyle factors that affect the immune system, like we mentioned. And then we're going to also talk about some supplements that can support your body. But I always say that these other things have to come first. And so if you're not sleeping enough and you're not getting movement in your life and you're not nourishing your body with food, the supplements are not going to be the thing that keeps you from getting sick. So we have to put it all together, and the supplements can really be just that add-on support there as well. To get started, we'll talk about how the immune system works. So our immune system really plays a vital role in protecting our body from viruses, bacteria, other organisms. And we have two different components of the immune system. So we have the innate immune system and the adaptive immune system, and these two parts work together. And so our innate immune system is really those physical barriers. So we have skin that protects our body from getting those bugs into our mucous membranes. We also have mucus that helps to protect us from viral things and bacterial things. And we also have some chemical barriers. So we have stomach acid. And so I always bring this up because stomach acid is supposed to kill bacteria in our gut. But do you know what so many Americans are taking, Lindsay?
It's PPIs.
PPIs, yes. So proton pump inhibitors. Proton pump inhibitors suppress the stomach acid and cause the stomach to be more basic. So we lose one of those key innate immune system defenses. And with that, we are also causing potential for overgrowth of bacteria in the gut, causing immune dysregulation. And when we talk, we're going to talk more about this, but the gut can be, when that dysregulation happens, damage starts happening to the gut. 70% of our immune system is gut. You can see where this is going. So we really want to make sure we have the proper amount of stomach acid. And then we also have secretory barriers such as enzymes, immunoglobulins. So those are happening even in the gut, like I mentioned, where you've got immunoglobulins coming out trying to fight infection before we actually have that cross into our bloodstream. And so the innate immune system does have an army behind it. We've got neutrophils, we've got macrophages, and we also have natural killer cells. But then we have the adaptive immune system. So the adaptive immune system is where we are going to provide our body with immunity and more long-lasting protection. And these immune cells have more of a specialized defense. And so when we think about the adaptive immune system army, we've got TH1 helper cells, which are going to stimulate immune response against viruses. We've also got those to help against cancer, because cancer really is this part of the immune system where it just gets dysregulated. And then we also have the TH2 helper cells, which increase production of antibodies and also help protect from parasites. And then we also have B cells. So as you're hearing things throughout our years from the beginning of the pandemic, but in a way it seems like we're still here. But when we talk about producing antibodies to different viruses, these are going to be made from the B cells, and then differentiate into plasma cells.
And those plasma cells produce the antibodies to help the body remember the pathogen. So even if you get a titer showing that you don't have a certain amount of antibodies, it doesn't necessarily mean that your body is not going to remember a virus. Now, when you have a higher amount of antibodies, you're probably going to be less likely to actually get sick. And with COVID, for example, people were saying, like, we measured quantitatively antibodies, and I can't remember off the top of my head what the number was that you needed to have, but there was a certain number that protected you from actually coming down with symptoms. But that doesn't mean that if you hadn't been exposed to COVID or had a COVID vaccination and had a low amount of antibodies, that your body is not going to be able to start making those antibodies once it's re-exposed to that infection. So those people tend to still have lesser symptoms, but they might actually get sick and might actually experience some kind of illness again. But it does help you not have as severe of illness when you have this memory capability by these cells. And so what happens is we have this bridge between the innate and the adaptive immune system, where the dendritic cells process part of that invader cell, and then they present that to the T cell. The T cell then passes the message to the B cell, and then again, the B cell, you know, produces the antibodies ultimately through the plasma cells. So we have this process happening where we're getting exposed to things. Our body is deciding, okay, this is foreign, this is not. Let's create antibodies to this process, so that we can prevent getting sick from this again. And so we also have to remember that we've got this two sides. This, we mentioned the TH1, TH2 process. And so there are things that in most healthy individuals, these are balanced. But if we have TH1 or TH2 dominance, it has been linked to some of the autoimmune conditions or chronic conditions when our immune system goes awry and starts attacking our own cells. That can be more of that autoimmune side of things. And so factors that affect that are the diet during a pregnancy affects the fetus and their TH1, TH2 response, urban living, antibiotics, early childhood exposure to allergens, their gut health, gut microbiome things, diet, all of those things are going to be playing a role in that balance. So sometimes the TH1 dominant conditions are more in those autoimmune spectrums. So type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Hashimoto's, which we see a lot of patients with Hashimoto's in our practice, and then which is an autoimmune thyroid, low thyroid condition. And we've talked about that on the podcast as well before. So if you haven't heard of it and you're suffering from what you think is low thyroid symptoms, but you're being told your labs sound great, definitely go back and reference that podcast. So those can be TH1 dominant conditions. And then we also have TH2 dominant conditions that are more like in the allergy spectrum. So allergic rashes or scleroderma. We've got ectopic eczema, which we also did a podcast on. Allergies, those kinds of things can be really, if you're more on the TH2 dominant side. So we really want to try to balance our immune system naturally. And things that can help with that are cutting down the stress, which we're going to talk about, addressing the gut microbiome imbalances, addressing environmental toxins, and we can talk more about that as well. And then infections. So if there's any infections, inflammation going on, chronic infections, those can be driving that response. And then some supplements that can help balance the TH1, TH2 naturally are vitamin D. We've talked a lot on this podcast about vitamin D. So if you've been listening for a while, you know that it's really important to get your vitamin D level to an appropriate place. We definitely don't want it less than 30. When we looked at data, people that had vitamin D levels less than 30 on based on the U.S. units of measure, but those people had more risk for severe COVID and more risk of being hospitalized for COVID early on in the pandemic. And we know from other data that higher levels of vitamin D, probably more in the 50 to 70 range, are probably more optimal for those autoimmune patients and helping to balance this process with the immune system. We do caution against extremely high levels of vitamin D because there is some data that it increases risk of cardiovascular disease because of that increased calcium absorption. We're talking when levels are pushing 100. And the data that we have there doesn't necessarily account for other nutrients like magnesium or vitamin K2 that are supporting pulling that calcium and making sure it's going to the bones. But again, like, we want to be cautious. And there's always this like extreme, right, on both sides. So we want to come somewhere in the middle with that and supporting our bodies. And then probiotics, vitamins like omega-3 fatty acids can be helpful.
And you can actually get tested for where your immune system markers are here to try to balance your immune system and make sure you're going in the right directions. So I'm going to pass it over to Lindsay to talk a little bit about like the lifestyle factors that are really affecting the immune system.
Awesome. Yes. So there are quite a few different lifestyle factors that can affect the immune system. And I'll go over each of these in a little bit more detail, but we're talking about your diet, your gut microbiome, your quality of sleep, stress, and then even physical activity. So we'll start with diet. There are a few different things you can do when it comes to diet to improve the functioning of your immune system. So increasing your protein intake is really important. This is going to help provide energy and amino acids for immune cell function. And I think this is a hot topic right now, like how much protein is too much. And I think a lot of people are agreeing that you can eat more protein than we originally thought. I've seen numbers around like 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight. So if your ideal body weight is 120 pounds, you could eat like 100 to 120 grams of protein a day. And that sounds like a lot. And for a lot of people, it probably is really difficult to achieve. But if you sit down and you really crunch the numbers, it is possible. Increasing fiber intake is something else that's really important. This is going to stimulate the immune system by increasing our good gut bacteria. And I think we all know that increasing fiber is going to help with those bowel movements, keep you regular, and that's going to help remove toxins that can burden the immune system. So increasing those cruciferous vegetables, those leafy greens, even berries can all really help with that fiber intake. Decreasing added sugar in your diet is huge. Sugar really does feed that bad bacteria in the gut, which can promote gut dysbiosis and then suppress the immune system. So really getting good at reading those labels, looking at that added sugar and really eliminating that is going to be key for supporting your immune system. And then increasing omega-3s, like Melody talked about, omega-3s are super important. They're going to help modulate the functions of the lymphocytes, the macrophages, and are important precursors in immune pathways. And when we talk about fats, there's a lot of talk about this good fat versus bad fat. So most foods have a ratio of these good omega-3s and then omega-6s. So inflammatory foods are going to have a high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, which means they're going to have more omega-6s than omega-3s. So those foods that are inflammatory that include a lot of omega-6s are going to be like your chips, your processed foods, your fried foods, mayonnaise, peanut butter, lunch meat. Those are the ones that are going to be inflammatory, having those high omega-6s. On the other hand, foods that are high in omega-3s are going to be your fatty fish, eggs, chia seeds, spinach, and broccoli. And a lot of times, even when we're focusing on eating more of these foods high in omega-3s, it can still be difficult to get enough of them. So that's where supplementation can really be important when it comes to omega-3s.
The sugar component for a minute. I think sometimes like the visual, there's a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that is talking about like the role of sugars in just the ability for your neutrophils to engulf bacteria in that like phagocytosis process. They did 100 grams of sugar from glucose, fructose, sucrose, honey, or orange juice. So even some of those natural sugars that were like, oh, that's great. But basically, following that, they saw statistically significant decreases in the ability for your neutrophils to have that phagocytic activity. Any of those simple carbohydrates caused the body to not be able to fight off that bacteria as effectively. And they looked at this like a half hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, or 5 hours post-eating that 100-gram glucose load. And so we think about like 100 grams of glucose, that's probably like, what, 3 cookies, 2 cookies, depending on what kind of cookie, if you're buying a cookie from that place that will remain nameless that everyone loves these days, that's probably just 1 cookie. But yeah, so I think thinking about like our body and these cells, I don't know if we could probably put in the show notes like a picture, a link to this article, but just like engulfing bacteria and the fact that like it can't do that when it consumes food.
The other interesting thing is that if people fast, so they have a 36 or 60 hour fast, that actually increases your vagus activity. Not that we're really suggesting that you fast for 36 hours, but just shows that you can improve by having those fasting time frames, which a lot of people are using intermittent fasting or time restricted eating for various health benefits, that immune system function may be one of those as well.
Yeah, I think we could probably talk about sugar for an entire hour, not to mention the glucose spike that you get and yes, how stressful that is on the body.
Yeah.
Omega-3s have quite a few different functions in the body. They are going to help support that immune system balance. They can also have a potential role in mood disorders and conditions such as ADHD. They're also anti-inflammatory, like we talked about. They can be beneficial in autoimmune conditions. And then fish oil use in pregnancy can lead to less wheezing, asthma, and respiratory tract infections in children. So you might want to grab maybe a notepad to write down some of this information that we're going to give you. So for kids, it's important to get about 120 to 1300 milligrams of omega-3s daily. And then for adults, at least 1,100 milligrams of DHA, EPA per day. And it's also recommended to get even higher doses than this if you have an autoimmune condition or some other inflammatory condition.
Yeah, sometimes the doses on autoimmune conditions or inflammatory conditions are 4,000, 5,000 DHA, EPA. If we're looking at data for like cardiovascular risk reduction, there's one actually prescription EPA formulation that is 4,000 milligrams a day of EPA to reduce reduce triglycerides, but also reduces cardiovascular risk. So the hard part, I think, for people shopping for these omega-3s is that when they're finding a bottle on the shelf of fish oil, they're normally only getting maybe 100 to 500 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids from that fish oil, even if the fish oil says it's 1,000, because they're putting on the label the whole fish oil grams and not the actual omega-3 fatty acid grams. So you really have to look deep at the label. And the other thing is, when you go into these supermarkets, you don't know how long the omega-3s have been sitting there. Fish oil can become rancid if it's at high temperatures. So we always recommend that you're looking for a good source. And if you need a good source, you know where to find our website. And we have some great omega-3 products that we'll link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think reading labels is definitely key when it comes to looking at the omega-3 supplements. So moving on to gut health, improving your immune health via the gut. A lack of diverse bacteria such as bifidobacterium and lactobacillus in the gut can lead to a lower immune function. Also, bad bacteria in the gut increases that gut permeability, or that leaky gut that we have talked about many times on this podcast. That's going to cause that systemic inflammation. On the other hand, good bacteria in the gut is protective, preventing yeast overgrowth or the overgrowth of that bad bacteria. And then factors potentiating dysbiosis could be poor diet, gastroparesis, or that slowing of the GI tract, constipation or diarrhea, certain medications, and then antibiotic use. Moving on to probiotics. So probiotics are going to help bolster the gut health. They are going to enhance the mechanical barriers in the gut, decreasing that gut permeability or that leaky gut. This is going to prevent those pathogens from penetrating into the gut and causing illness or inflammation. Supplementing with the lactobacillus, the bifidobacterium, can actually increase those immunoglobulins, the IgA, IgM, IgG. And then they also help modulate that TH1, TH2 balance in the response, which is especially helpful for the patients with allergies, autoimmune conditions, and diabetes. When you're looking for a probiotic for kids, you're definitely going to want to look for that lactobacillus and that bifidobacterium, and then look for strains that have about 5 billion CFUs. And you can also consider maybe spore-based strains for kiddos. And then for adults, you also, again, want to look for that lactobacillus, bifidobacterium. Even Saccharomyces boulardii has been beneficial, very helpful, especially for people who suffer from diarrhea. And then also spore-based probiotics. And looking for doses around 10 billion CFUs is what you're looking for. I know there's so many probiotics on the market and numbers, yes, and it can get really confusing.
Yeah, I think the cool thing is that we're at a place where we're starting to see. So I actually have sitting next to me here this package that is this new company that we may be working with at some point, but they do stool testing. So this is my package to send in my stool sample. But then they analyze your microbiome and then give you a custom formulated probiotic based on what your microbiome looks like, which is like,
wow,
amazing, right? And so yeah, I'm really excited to try it and just see how it works so we can talk about it on here and share with our patients. Because I think that it, like, we get these stool tests back all the time. And a lot of times what we're looking for in stool tests is infection information, looking at, you know, what the commensal microbiome looks like. But the strains that are actually in your microbiome aren't always like the strains that were in probiotics. And so putting all the pieces together and having someone else say, this is actually what the data shows with the, for your microbiome, is really cool. So I'm excited to see how that works out. So that's on my to-do list this week.
So moving on to sleep is super important for immune health. A lack of sleep can increase inflammation in the body, which is then going to decrease our immune system response. And the body really does repair itself during sleep. So if you think about it, it's going to help repair that gut lining that might be damaged. So really getting that restful sleep, that deep sleep, is going to help repair all sorts of things in your body. And then a lack of sleep has actually been linked to an increase in the risk of catching the flu. So if you're not getting enough sleep, you might be at more risk for cold, flu, all the different viruses out there. And sleeping between 8 and 9 hours a night has been shown to improve white blood cell count, which is pretty interesting. Working on sleep hygiene. I know a lot of people have trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep. So sleep hygiene is super important to just get your body ready for sleep. And I know we have a blog post on this topic. I'm pretty sure we have a previous podcast episode on this topic. I think it was one of our first, but making sure your room is dark and avoiding that blue light, which of course comes from all those electronics that we have right in front of our faces all day, every day. So 1 to 2 hours before you go to bed, put those down, or at least put some really high quality blue light blocker glasses on. Cut down on the caffeine in general throughout the day, but then also don't drink any caffeine in the afternoon because that's really going to affect your sleep in a negative way. And then really try to stick to a regular sleep schedule. I think a lot of people will stick to a regular schedule during the week and then they'll change it up a little bit on the weekend to catch up on sleep, but that kind of tricks your body and confuses your body. So then even if you sleep extra on like Friday night, Saturday night, by the time the beginning of the week comes around, your body's going to be a little confused and you might not be able to fall asleep as quickly on Sunday night as you usually do, like on Thursday night, for example.
This is something I really need to work on personally, is getting like that consistent schedule. Because some nights, like I'm in bed at 10, some nights midnight, some nights 11, like trying to find that time that's to be in bed by 11. That needs to be my goal.
Yeah, and it's not easy. If you have kids, like our kids' activities are different every night, so that might push dinner back, or you might be out late picking them up from an activity. And yeah, it can definitely be a challenge. And then focusing on stress is going to be super important when it comes to having an optimal immune system. Emotional stress is huge. It can actually increase inflammation in the body and lower the white blood cells' ability to kill pathogens. Our body responds to emotional stress the same way it does physical stress. They're one and the same. So if you can do your best to manage that emotional stress in a better way, You're definitely going to have a better functioning immune system. Laughing has actually been shown to increase immune response by increasing immune cells. So watching a funny show or a funny movie with your kids, or we like to watch like cute puppy videos and cat videos and just anything to get you laughing can help. Yoga can also help. It helps increase well-being through relaxation, improved concentration, even increasing your attention span and lowering irritability. I think everyone can benefit from those things. And there are certain poses. If you're a yogi, tortoise pose can support the thymus gland. And downward dog and camel pose can actually improve sinus flow and help flush mucus from the lungs, which is pretty interesting.
Have you listened to the Nate Bargatze thing that I sent you to for the laughter feet?
I did not yet, but I feel like okay. Maybe today's the day so I can get some laughs in.
Support your immune system. Tell your family.
Yes, exactly.
I'm supporting my immune system.
So the last one we're going to talk about is exercise. And this is actually pretty interesting. So prolonged, intense exercise. So when you think about this, think about a level of an athlete, a professional athlete. So prolonged intense exercise can actually lower IgA levels in the mucus. And this has been shown by higher rates of respiratory infections in athletes. So this increases stress. This increases your stress hormone cortisol. And that is going to actually suppress the immune system. So if you're someone who just loves that HIIT cardio, it's probably not recommended to do HIIT cardio for 45 minutes, 6 days a week. You really do want to give your body a rest from that and focus on more moderate exercise. Moderate exercise can help strengthen the immune system by lowering cortisol and increasing the circulation of blood and lymphatic fluid. So this is going to be like gardening. But when it's warmer, get outside, get in your garden. You can also do water aerobics, brisk walking, or yoga, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's one that I find like a lot of people, including myself, get back in exercise. So they go like hardcore into it, starting this new like workout plan, and then boom, like you're sick because of the stress that is on your body. And so I actually canceled one of my subscriptions this week to one of those like online workout programs because I felt like that was always happening to me every time I would do them. So I am trying out using Apple Fitness app and telling it like I want 4 days a week of working out and I want 20 minutes of something, and then always having like at least 10 minute mindful cool downs to bring down your heart rate. And so I'm trying that. So I have one day of HIIT training, one day of, I think I selected like bike, with spin biking, one day of dance because that's a little bit more fun. You're still getting movement in. And then one day of strength training, but always having the mindful cool down with it. Plus I'm already paying for that service because of it's, I don't know, part of our Apple package that you also get your data backup and all that kind of stuff. So if you're that person that's already paying for that and you're listening, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that Apple Fitness was an option. It's actually pretty similar to the Peloton app as far as like the types of workouts that are available, including the spin biking. Although I'm still waiting for Apple to come out with the bike that works with the videos like Peloton. But maybe someday I need to write them and be like, listen, are you going to do this? Or is this just in my mind? But exercise, and that leads us into conversations about some of the supplements. So specifically, I'll skip down to vitamin C first, but there's actually been some data that vitamin C, which we know is always one that everyone takes vitamin C when you're sick. There's been some studies that, you know, if we take higher doses of vitamin C, we might shorten our duration of cold. But there's actually some data like post-exercise vitamin C, because of that extra inflammation that we're causing when we're doing that more intense exercise, vitamin C being an antioxidant and helping prevent immune cells from breaking down from the oxidative stress. In these studies, patients took anywhere from 600 to 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C right before that heavy exercise, and it actually decreased their immune suppression afterwards. And so they had less infections, which was pretty cool. And then we do know vitamin C deficiency has been linked to risk for increased infection. Now, likelihood that someone's vitamin C deficient, like severe vitamin overt deficiency and has scurvy in our society these days, unless you're a sailor, is not very common, but there's probably less than optimal as well. So you might be getting some, but not enough, maybe because of all the extra inflammation going on the body, all your vitamin C is being used to help combat that oxidative stress and is not able to support the immune system as much. But the recommended doses really do vary from a like daily allowance standpoint. We're probably topping less than 500 milligrams as far as RDA. But we know that like when we're sick, we probably need more than those recommended daily allowances. There's actual studies that in adults that have acute illness, you can go up to 3 grams a day. So that's 3,000 milligrams, which is a lot of vitamin C. And if you're doing like any regular ascorbic acid vitamin C, you're likely going to have diarrhea from that much vitamin C. So if you are trying to dose vitamin C higher, doing like a liposomal vitamin C, which is where it mixes, actually I have one right here that was a sample, but it like is mixed with phospholipids. So some of the times that can be put in a capsule and sometimes it's in like a packet that you drink, but that can help the GI tolerability of the higher doses of vitamin C. And even in kids, there's been some studies in acute illness that you can go up to 2 grams. So definitely talk to your healthcare providers about that. We're just providing general information based on what we've seen in the literature. I know when my kids are sick, I will definitely give them around 1 gram. I mix like applesauce up with all of the different supplements that I want them to have during that acute illness. And sometimes I'll even do it like, okay, we went to church, you're exposed to a full new group of kids in the Sunday school, so we're going to take some extra immune supporting nutrients this day and maybe a couple times a week in the winter. I'm not great about getting them their little concoction daily, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend a full gram of vitamin C daily, but buffered vitamin C isn't for kids at least. The buffered vitamin C is another option to help improve the GI tolerability. I will say I think liposomal is probably the best if you're really sensitive to GI symptoms. But the buffer does help a little bit. It has some calcium carbonate and some magnesium and things to help with the GI tract, not having diarrhea as well. So during COVID, we're like, dose your vitamin C until you have diarrhea. They were going really high. So definitely consider adding in some vitamin C to your routine. I will say, I think like from last year, I had a lot of viruses and I had COVID, I had shingles, which is reactivated virus, and then I had hand, foot, and mouth. But ever since I started taking liposomal vitamin C more on a daily basis, I think my kids have been sick with viral stuff, not extreme things, but I still need to work my sleep and movement combination. But I think like from a supplement standpoint, that's definitely been helping me. One of the things I also mix in my kids' concoction is called colostrum. So colostrum is that first milk. When we think about breastfeeding, babies get that first milk, and we know it's rich in IgG. It's also rich in proteins, and immunoglobulins actually help to improve the gut health. So they help to seal the gut lining, which is why it's so important for babies to get the colostrums. You know, I say to, obviously fed is best. We have this whole debate on breastfeeding versus formula a lot of times online and different places. But even if mom can help baby get colostrum, like that's really great. But the other thing to think about is this, we can use a source from cows. So this, what we can give ourselves as supplements is bovine colostrum. And this has been studied for diarrhea. So higher doses, like 10 grams a day, has been used to treat diarrhea caused by common bacteria like E. coli or Shigella, but usually well tolerated, even with those people that have some kind of, even if you have a slight dairy sensitivity, sometimes you can tolerate the colostrum. Now there is, certainly if you have a dairy allergy, a true dairy allergy, you're not going to want to take this, but there is a version that is actually made from immunoglobulins of the blood of bovine. So it's serum-derived bovine immunoglobulins. But those can be used in patients with dairy allergies or dairy sensitivities. But that doesn't quite have all the same immune benefits as colostrum. So really, if we're looking for like the immune benefits from an overall health standpoint, colostrum is probably still going to be our better choice, but SBI can be a good choice for people with severe diarrhea, severe inflammation in the gut. It still, you know, is really good at those things. But there's actually some studies with athletes, coming back to the exercise thing again, that athletes who took 20 grams of colostrum for 4 weeks had less upper respiratory infections that athletes did not. And it was the patients who took colostrum, only 25% of them had respiratory infections, where the people that took the placebo, 61% of them had respiratory infections. That's pretty big difference. And then there, but it's 20 grams is a lot. But then the dose for adults, again, it ranged from 400 milligrams for 8 weeks when they were looking at adults for influenza. And then it went up to some studies had 60 grams of colostrum. And so anywhere less than 2 years old can take up to 3 grams. Greater than 2 years old, 3 grams twice a day was one study that they were looking to prevent upper respiratory tract infections. There's definitely, my kids, again, I mix like a scoop of this with their, I call it an applesauce thing in my house, but it's like, I'm for your applesauce thing, but it's got a scoop of colostrum and it has zinc and vitamin C and some other vitamin D drops. So it's something that you can get in if they are applesauce eaters. If they're not applesauce eaters, I don't know. It's if they can swallow capsules, they can come in capsules. But I know my nephews, my sister has trouble getting their kids to take it. It would mix in a smoothie. You just might want to make a smaller quantity so that they don't have this whole smoothie left over and you wasted your money because your colostrum is sitting in this cup that's still there. Lizzie, have you ever tried to give it to your kids?
I haven't, but the one that I take actually tastes really good. It's a powder that you just mix in water. I've had the watermelon flavor, which is really good, and I'm doing the orange flavor right now, and the orange flavor tastes like an orange pixie stick. So it's pretty good. I think my kids would drink
it. My nephews need this.
Okay. If you haven't seen the ads for it yet, I'm sure you will now that we said colostrum.
Now that we're talking about it.
Yeah, I have not. So we'll have to check that out and put that in the show notes.
Yes. So that's interesting. But yeah, if it tastes like a pixie stick, maybe I can get my nephew to try it out.
As far as other nutrients, so vitamin A is one that I think we forget about a lot because there's all this like, too much vitamin A is a bad thing, which it can be. It's a fat-soluble vitamin, just like vitamin D. Vitamin A helps to maintain the mucosal barriers and the skin barriers and also helps the white blood cells to differentiate, which means to turn into the different types of white blood cells. And so it's really important for having our body secrete something what's called lactoferrin and then also for those natural killer cells to work properly. And then it also helps our body in its inflammatory response and the immunoglobulin A response. So the dosing for this, I generally say stick with some of those recommended daily allowances. There are some studies where vitamin A is used therapeutically in conditions, measles or like viral things. So definitely, you know, if you're having issues with those type things, which obviously there's some, most people are vaccinated for measles. But if that is something that you encounter, definitely talk to your provider about that data. And a lot of people are getting like the correct amount of vitamin A for their age based on their multivitamin. So just have a look at your child's multivitamin or your multivitamin and see if you're getting enough in there as well. And then vitamin D, we talked about a little bit already. So people, again, are considered deficient by standard medical terms. You would be less than 30 nanograms per milliliter. And then we talked about how people with that had worse outcomes for COVID and the optimal levels are anywhere. Some references 50 to 70, some 60 to 80. I really don't like to see it too much further than 80 just because of those cardiovascular risk data that we have. And then there are studies that show improvement in respiratory outcomes from vitamin D supplementation. Most likely that benefit is really for those people that are deficient. So if you are severely deficient and you improve that severe deficiency, then obviously we're going to see a reduction in respiratory tract infections. If you were in your normal range or in the optimal range, adding more vitamin D is not necessarily going to improve that, which I think makes sense. But we are able to talk about that a little bit. But for kids, I mean, the dosing is generally based on when we dose it for patients, it's based on what their level is. So we measure a blood level because it's super easy to test. And we'll dose anywhere in adults from 2,000 international units to 10,000 international units, which we're starting to see the FDA change things over from international units to milligrams. But that's something you can talk to your provider about. But the kids are a little harder because most of the time we're not going to take a child to the lab just to draw a vitamin D. If you've ever taken a child for blood work, you know that that's not fun. But I would say that less than 1 year old, some of the dosing on the baby drops is around 400 IUs a day. It's not into breast milk very well. So if someone is breastfeeding, then you definitely want to consider supplementing a child. And then you can do 1 to 8 year old might be anywhere from 600 to 1,000. Greater than 9, you might even go up to 2,000. So again,
I like to test kids if I can. There are some finger stick spot testing kits available that you can just do a finger stick to get enough blood to test the vitamin D level. If your child is struggling with immune and maybe they have signs of autoimmune, they have signs of allergy, eczema type things, they have frequent infections, maybe it is a reason to see how deficient are they, because maybe you need more than you're actually giving. But it just in general, I think those are some good general guidance. There's also K2, which we have a full article on the blog about the importance of vitamin K2 in helping the calcium go into the bone, support the bone health, improve the cardiovascular risk fare. So definitely check that out. And there's not as much data for K2 use in children as adults. So you can decide like what you do there, I would say. It's probably safe, but do we have a lot of studies that are using K2 alongside vitamin D in children? Probably not as much. But I do think about from a bone health standpoint and even like teeth and things that it might not be a bad idea to get in once in a while. So if you're taking the vitamin D K2 drops and your kid's taking the D, maybe giving them once a week the K2. But that's, I'm just saying that based on what I might do with my kids. But Lizzie, do you do the regular vitamin D or do you do the combo for your kids?
We do the regular vitamin D.
Regular.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what most people would do. But yeah, so I think that's something you can think. Certainly if your kid is one that maybe has frequent bone fractures, or that might be something to look deeper into, maybe more nutrients than just the vitamin D and what might be causing that issue there. But as far as other thoughts on supplements, we have also zinc, which is a common one that we're talking about a lot. And zinc is really important because zinc deficiency suppresses the development of those T cells in the thymus and also causes the B cells to suffer because of that. So when we think about COVID, I know we've been referencing that a lot, but I think that's really when like the media started talking about immune function more than it ever did, and where there was more articles about nutrients and their impact on immune function than probably we had seen in a long time. But with COVID, we found that people with zinc deficiency actually were more likely to even get the symptoms of losing sense of taste and smell, because zinc is involved in that process. And then when they repleted their zinc and had more zinc, they actually, or started taking zinc when they got the symptoms, those people actually resumed getting their taste and smell back faster than the people that didn't take zinc. So definitely something to consider. If you were one that had that symptom of COVID, you might want to consider that, checking your zinc level. But IBS and obesity, anorexia, chronic fatigue syndrome, people with HIV or people that are elderly are going to be at more risk for zinc deficiency. It's really important nutrient in healing because it's involved in the formation of DNA. Zinc is literally in like almost every process in the body. And it does have some data about reducing duration of cold symptoms. Interestingly, some of that data is related to like topical zinc at the back of your throat in the form of a lozenge. And because zinc decreases viral replication, and that's where the viral replication is happening, if we can, like, okay, so your kids start getting sick, you should start using those zinc lozenges, because if you have any viral replication happening in the back of the throat, it will decrease that. That is one way. But then you can also take it by mouth for acute reasons, maybe do 15 milligrams a day with duration of their cold. But if they're just trying to get enough zinc for their normal day, it's going to depend on their age based on the recommended daily allowance. And then the adults, you might do larger doses of lozenges throughout the day. I would say the general dose for zinc, like if we're talking metabolic syndrome, is about 20 to 30 milligrams of elemental zinc a day, or zinc sulfate. But if we're doing like colder, you're not going to imbalance or popper too much by taking 100 milligrams or more in a day if it's a short-term thing. So definitely follow package instructions, talk to your providers. But I think from a short-term standpoint, adults can take a little bit more. There's even the zinc nasal sprays, but there has been some situations, case reports of people using, I don't even know, is it still on the market, the Zicam spray for the nose?
You know, I feel like if it's back on the market, I think they took it off for a while, right? Because okay. I think the sense of smell.
Yeah, the people losing their sense of smell. So it's interesting because like zinc deficiency causes you to lose the sense of smell with virals, but then that was causing issues when you put so much in the nasal passage. But I think I saw someone use one that was just, it wasn't like a nasal spray. It was almost like a little swab that they put up in their nose. So there's like those options too, which I guess makes sense, like a lozenge in the back of the throat, but we're just swabbing the nasal passage. I'm not sure I would use the nasal spray one if that is still available because of the risk of losing your sense of smell. And then let's see what else we want to talk about. So there are some things like echinacea that are often promoted for stimulating the immune system. So stimulates macrophage activation and natural killer cell response. It's been shown to reduce frequency, severity, duration of cold symptoms in some studies. One study found children taking a blend of echinacea and vitamin C had fewer respiratory infections, ear infections, lower rates of pneumonia, which actually equated in the study a 50% reduction of use in antibiotics. So that's like crazy to think about. And just the fact that the gut microbiome impacts and just other impacts in their trajectory that might have happened had they had more antibiotics. But then the echinacea is also, it's in a lot of blends, and you can get it by itself and drink it as tea, but there's a lot of blends that we like to use that have vitamin A and C and echinacea, and a lysine is another one that increases immune function. And so sometimes there's different products that contain those different things for both kids and adults. But I just want to close with talking a little bit about mushroom extracts. So mushrooms are, they have a number of, I think they're becoming more and more popular. You've got mushroom coffee, and you've got this like adaptogenic conversation with the mushrooms that they help to support your adrenal glands. But then you've also got these biologically active compounds that are different like polysaccharides found in these mushrooms. And they're mostly called glucans. And then these glucans are helping to support the immune system. So they have these biological responses that help to modulate immune cell function. Again, helping to support the macrophages, the natural killer cells, those T lymphocytes. Even that TH1, TH2 balance, which is good because when we think about immune supporting things, we don't just want to rev up our immune system if our immune system is dysregulated. But there's different kinds of mushrooms. There's the cordyceps, there's frill oyster, there's shiitake, there's, I think it's shunga, turkey tails. So lots of different products. And so a lot of these are supporting the innate immune system. So they might call them like innate immune system support by some companies. But we'll link some of those products in our show notes. And there's also a compound that I learned about recently called eucalyptocoidin, I think is how you say it. But it is also a polysaccharide, but it's found naturally in seaweed instead of mushrooms. And so it has a lot of different ways that it supports and modulates the immune function, often can dampen allergic responses as well. But there were some interesting studies related to patients that were being vaccinated for the flu that they took a dose of a 300 milligram dose of this, and they showed increased antibody titers in patients that got the flu vaccine than patients we didn't. So you can definitely see just from that activation of the immune system. And I think the reason they looked at, I know we have different opinions on vaccination, especially for the flu, but they looked at that because they could see we are exposed to this virus. This is what happens to the immune system from a study standpoint. It's a little harder when people are just randomly being exposed to things and we don't really know. So that was really cool to see. And then there is some data that acting as an immune modulator, helping prime the immune system, reducing inflammation. So there's a couple blends that are also available that help to modulate the immune system and prime the immune system there. And then Saccharomyces cerevisiae, I think I'm saying that sounds like beer, right? When we're touching the palmnet from, maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, but it sounds like the Mexican or the bad word for beer. But basically, this is also a beta-glucan. So we talked about that from the mushrooms, but it's actually from this beneficial yeast product. And so there's some data on decreased cold. It is, I think, decreased cold by up to 25% at 900 milligrams. Another study showed reduced colds 15.6% versus 2% with the placebo group. And then another study used in a post-workout drink to reduce upper respiratory tract infection. So doses ranged anywhere from 250 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams. But studies show that it causes this influence on the immune system with different pathways. So both innate and adaptive immune responses. So lots of different products. And I think it can be overwhelming to look at and decide. The one caution I would say with patients is making sure you talk to your doctor about what's best for you. If you have an autoimmune condition, really focusing on the nutrient side of things, like the D's, the zincs, the making sure your nutrient levels are adequate, omega-3 fatty acids, because we want to avoid an overstimulated immune system when you're already having this dysregulated immune system. So for some people, it may be helpful to only use certain supplements when there's a higher likelihood of getting sick, maybe when traveling during winter months. Like I take a break from our colostrum support during the summer a lot of times because they're not as exposed to these things unless I'm like preparing for travel or something and trying to make sure that they're healthy and good to go. Because we do need to get sick in a way because we saw what happened in COVID where no one got sick through lockdown. And then we come out of COVID and everyone's getting sick all the time because our immune system wasn't primed and wasn't responding to things like it should. I think there's reason for doing the balance thing and knowing that it's okay if you get sick. You're not failing if you get the cold or flu. Most of the time, it means your body's a little run down. You didn't get enough sleep. So things to think about. But takeaway points really with our conversation today are the immune system is complex. And so we're simplifying it a lot by some of the explanations that we had here. But the foundational things like eating habits, stress habits, as far as stress management, the sleep habits and exercise can really help our bodies and be more supportive there. And then again, those nutrients, I would say first start from supporting your body with supplements would be looking at, do I have any potential nutrient deficiencies and addressing those? And then if you don't, then maybe looking at some of the other things that support the diet or these mushroom extracts or things like that, that can help balance things in the background. But any other takeaway points, Lindsay, that you want to add?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. But really focusing on stress, I think, is a huge one. We're coming into the holiday season where a lot of people were probably way more stressed than they normally are on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Even just starting with that would probably really help a lot of people.
Yes. Yes. So if you haven't listened to some of our stress podcasts, you can go back and listen to that. And it can feel like your body is just not responding to some of those easy lifestyle modifications. There may be something deeper that needs addressed. And so you can look for us and make an appointment with one of our providers on our website. So thanks so much, Lindsay, for joining today. And hopefully this immune little recap of the immune system and immune support was helpful.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.